Curtis Lewa.
Two young people decided to form their own organization called the Guardian Angels. You see them with red berets. When you see them, you get a nice, secure feeling in your heart.
I admire Curtis Lewa, and I think that he takes his life into his own hands doing what he does.
Curtis Lewa, the Guardian Angels founder and leader.
We've got Curtis Lewa from WABC Radio.
Curtis Lewa, legendary New York.
The Drive at 5 with Curtis Lewa. What happened today, why, and what's next? Live, local, on it, 77 WABC.
The spring and here she comes back. Hi, 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 hi there.
Them summer days, oh summer days.
7 minutes after the hour of 5. Yours truly, as I return here to the Drive Home at 5, Curtis Lewa. And we're high atop Madison Square Garden in the great facilities provided by NJDiet.com to do this broadcast. And I want to thank Rita Cosby for having substituted yesterday and the day before Ellis Hennigan. As a result of me attending to taking care of my responsibilities to my mother, our family, which prepared for the wake that took place that many of you WABC listeners attended in Greenwich Village, and then the high funeral mass yesterday at 11 a.m. at St. Patrick's Cathedral, and then my mother Francesca's burial in St. Mary's Cemetery in Queens, right at the side of my father, who passed just 5 years ago. So I really want to thank you for all the condolences, the well wishes, and the memories that so many of you have shared in the experiences that you had with my mother, Francesca, whether as fellow radio listeners or as those who had learned from her. She was a teacher of concept therapy and a practitioner for many, many years of that philosophy of positive thinking. And naturally, the many guardian angels who flew in from all over the world, from Japan, from Las Vegas, from Baltimore, Chicago, eastern Pennsylvania, and other parts to pay tribute to the person who is most responsible for having been there from day one and keeping this thing of mine alive. So many, many thanks. And in fact, the New York Times did really a great obituary to my mother, Francesca. If you go to our Facebook page, our program Facebook page, you could read that at length. Meantime, earlier today, as promised, remember it was last week, it was a contentious series of meetings that our President Donald Trump had with NATO leaders, especially Merkel of Germany, Macron of France. And it basically focused on the climate change agreement, the Paris Accord. And Trump had hinted that he would make a final decision this week. And he announced that just prior to us coming on the microphones during the Michael Savage show. This is some of what Donald Trump said earlier today about why we are withdrawing.
In order to fulfill my solemn duty to protect America and its citizens, the United States will withdraw from the Paris Climate Accord, but begin negotiations to reenter either the Paris Accord or in really entirely new transaction on terms that are fair to the United States, its businesses, its workers, its people, its taxpayers.
And then he spoke about the economic reasons for doing this.
The reality is that withdrawing is in America's economic interest and won't matter much to the climate. Compliance with the terms of the Paris Accord and the onerous energy restrictions that is placed on the United States could cost America as much as 2.7 million lost jobs by 2025.
And then the president delivered his punchline.
The Paris Agreement handicaps the United States economy in order to win praise from the very foreign capitals and global activists that have long sought to gain wealth at our country's expense. They don't put America first. I do, and I always will. I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris.
That's the punchline. I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris. On the line to discuss it, Brian Kahn, senior writer for Climate Central. Thanks for joining us, Brian, here on the Drive Home at 5.
Yeah, thanks for having me. I appreciate it.
All right, so to that punchline that the president delivered as part of his presentation of why we're pulling out of the climate accord, that he represents the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris. What do you say to that?
It's a good line. It's also a bit interesting. The mayor of Pittsburgh himself tweeted right after hearing that, as the mayor of Pittsburgh, I can assure you that we will follow the guidelines of the Paris Agreement for our people, our economy, and our future. So I would say that, you know, it's a great line. It sounds good, but it's not necessarily representative of some of the people that he was talking about.
All right. Now, Brian, what are the dire ramifications in your mind in terms of America's pullout from this climate change agreement?
It leaves the U.S. pretty isolated. There are only two other countries that didn't sign on. One is Syria, which we know what's going on in Syria. The other is Nicaragua, which is a state that didn't sign on because they thought the agreement wasn't ambitious enough. So it really leaves the U.S. on the outside looking in on this major, you know, international agreement. That's not really an advantageous place to be. China, the EU, a number of other countries have already committed to the Paris Agreement after hearing the speech, and they've said they're going to go forth with it. So with losing a seat at the table sort of takes the U.S. out of that equation and could leave it behind economically. It's also notable that...
Well, the president didn't say a complete pullout. He said a renegotiation. He mentioned in the course of his presentation how unfair he felt it was that China and India could continue to develop their coal reserves and fuel their power plants with that coal, while we would be restricted under this measure. I guess to an average person, that would seem unfair, wouldn't it?
Yeah, I can understand you'd think that. I mean, a big part of this is that the U.S. is largely, it's the largest historical emitter of carbon dioxide in the world. So you could argue that it also has the biggest, need to commit to do more. Another thing just to note, too, is that while those countries are allowed to explore some of their coal and oil reserves into the future for a short term, the whole idea underpinning this agreement is this idea of common but differentiated responsibilities. The idea that countries that are wealthy, like the U.S., that have built themselves up using, you know, fossil fuels for years and years, have a bigger commitment to do more than the countries that are still developing. But eventually we'll all get to the same place, which is having a clean energy economy.
All right. But from what I understand, and correct me if I'm wrong, all of this really doesn't come together, you know, every dotted, every T crossed until November 4th of 2020. Am I correct on that?
Yeah, I mean, the agreement goes into force down the road, and then the idea is from there, nations will, in theory, ratchet up their responsibilities. So that's sort of a starting point for this. And then from there, they're going to be doing more and more to meet their climate commitments and ultimately reduce carbon dioxide emissions globally.
Right, but because we're in 2017, that would leave this president, Donald Trump, a lot of elbow room in which to renegotiate and get back into it in an agreement that would be better off to the economic interests of the United States. So what's wrong with letting him try that?
He's certainly welcome to try that. And if he can get there where it's economically better and still, you know, just cut carbon emissions, I mean, that would be a win-win. The reality is that other countries have already spoken up to say they're committed to this accord that's been signed that took years to get to. A number of EU countries have already issued a joint statement saying that they are not open to renegotiating this agreement. So, you know, the odds of him actually being able to successfully do that are fairly low. I know he also expressed interest in working with Democrats on this. If they'd be willing to cross the aisle, that would be interesting too. But as the healthcare situation sort of has played out, you've seen that Democrats aren't really interested in doing that, and they have their own plans for how to move forward.
All right. And Brian, finally, there's always been the old common analogy that you can trust your neighbor, but you ought to verify if, in fact, they're following this agreement. There are really no provisions that would force somebody to follow this agreement. There are no penalties involved from what I see. So really, it's all based on good faith. And how do you verify if, in fact, those countries are at least following the spirit of the accord?
It definitely is. It's a good faith thing. I mean, the emissions reductions that countries have committed to are voluntary. And part of that was because there was some uncertainty with the U.S. The U.S. in past international agreements didn't want to commit to, you know, hard and fast emissions reductions. there is a bit of good nature, trust thy neighbor kind of thing. There are also ways to verify emissions in different countries. And so ultimately, you know, those emissions will be checked. Many countries that aren't succeeding in meeting their goals or that are falling behind are subject to sort of condemnation or other sort of tools that are available throughout the international community to ensure that they actually do meet their goals.
I do appreciate that. That's Ryan Kahn. He's the senior writer for Climate Central. And if you were listening to the president or you just heard the cuts that we just played here, there's no doubt the line of the day was that I was elected to represent the citizens of Pittsburgh, not Paris. But as Brian pointed out, Pittsburgh is no longer a steel-making center in the United States. You don't see the clouds hovering over the city as I did when I was a kid, when my parents would be driving through to head off to Chicago and then through Youngstown, Ohio, another steel-making city, as was Gary, Indiana, all on the route to Chicago. You don't see that any longer because most of those mills have been closed down. So it's interesting that he used the town of Pittsburgh instead of other smaller towns like Sharon, Pennsylvania, which was devastated as a result of the steel mills closing down and the fact that little, if anything, could fill the void and replace them. So there are people in that valley in Pennsylvania, not far from Youngstown, not far from Pittsburgh, could actually have gainful employment again.
Curtis Lewa.
He's a man of the people.
Between the Scylla and Charybdis of commentary.
The Drive at 5, 77 WABC.
It's another day, another opportunity to talk about Utradito. Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, the speaker of the 51 feckless, deadbeat city council people. Not one of them have raised their voice in opposition to her making Oscar Lopez Rivera terrorist number one of FALN days. The grand marshal of this annual Puerto Rican Day parade set to step up Fifth Avenue on June 11th. Before we get to that momentarily, you're going to hear from Jeff McKay about power outages in the East River Tunnel. And that means some canceled trains leaving Penn Station for Jamaica. Like, this is an everyday thing, right? Just like we discuss the Puerto Rican Day Parade every day. Well, here is Melissa Mark Viva Rito once again trying to explain why she wants to honor this terrorist.
Many in the Puerto Rican community are elated to have him here as he represents the tenacity of what it is to be Puerto Rican, Boricua.
Is that what it means to be Boricua? She continues.
We have to look at the widespread support, the disproportionate sentence, again, to an individual that was not linked to any act of violence that hurt or killed anyone.
You know, it's interesting, not linked. He was the leader of the organization responsible for 120 bombings, the maiming and the killing of cops and citizens, the bombing at Francis Tavern. I can go on and on and on.
I truly do believe that those decisions have been misguided. If we look at the statements that have been made as to why they're not participating, they're all lies. They're based on information that is not accurate.
Now, wait a second. John Ruiz, district leader of her own Democratic club, a cumbarichich to Melissa Mark, Viva Libre, Libre Puerto Rico in East Harlem. Couldn't be closer to Melissa politically. And yet he's broken ranks with her on this.
You know, this guy was a murderer, you know, a mass murderer if you look at it. 146 bombings and one in my district, right across the street from my house. I can look out my window and see the area in 1974 where he bombed. And it took the eye out of a police officer on his second day.
That's her closest political ally. And then naturally there's Comrade Bill de Blasio, your mayor, going a humada, 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 humada.
I'm not marching with this individual. I never was going to march with him.
And guess where Oscar Lopez Rivera is going to be staying both before, during, and after the parade? He's going to be staying in the townhouse that Melissa Mark, Viva Libre Puerto Rico, owns in East Harlem. Isn't that nice to know? She is just a total groupie. of a guy who has never renounced violence, never renounced the acts of the FALN, and I believe continues to support the revolution that he was involved with against the United States from the Commonwealth of Puerto Rico and from the mainland of the United States. That's a double oofa to Melissa Mark. Viva Libre Puerto Rico.
Curtis Sliwa.
The next mayor of the city of New York.
Drive at 5.
Curtis Sliwa, legendary New Yorker.
77 WABC.
No sleep till...
As we continue taking you home on the drive home at 5. As many of you know, I multitask, not only broadcasting here at WABC twice a day, 12 to 3, and then so nice they have me do it twice on the drive home, 5 to 6. But I'm the leader and founder of the Guardian Angels, and I also recently was elected the chairman of the New York State Reform Party. And with that in mind, we had an opportunity to see candidates for our line in the citywide elections, meaning for the mayoralty, the public advocate, and the controller slot. And late last night, we took a vote of our executive council, and we came up with Michael Faulkner for controller. Many of you know him. He was running for mayor originally on the Republican line. J.C. Polanco, a Hispanic Republican from the Bronx. And so people just assume, oh, okay, your mayoral pick is maybe going to be Nicole Malliotakis, the Republican, or Paul Massey, the Republican, or maybe someone else. Ixnay on that, we overwhelmingly chose Sal Albanese, Democrat, who's been in city council, has run for mayor before, to be our Reform Party candidate for New York mayor. And we have him on the line right now. Thanks for joining us again, Sal.
Hey, Curtis, thank you for having me on. Mr. Chairman, thank you and the executive committee for their vote of confidence. It's an honor to be able to represent the Reform Party. It's a real opportunity to clean up politics in this city and take the for sale sign down from City Hall.
Well, you know, it's interesting, Sal, when we announced you as our candidate, a lot of people say, wait a second, isn't he in a Democratic primary against the sitting mayor, Bill de Blasio? And why would you endorse someone that many think is a Democrat and has liberal progressive values? You have an opportunity to speak to the voters now. Why would somebody who maybe has a conservative orientation or a conservative moderate orientation, why should they consider you as the next mayor?
Well, because I think whether you're conservative, liberal, or independent, whatever you're political philosophy, everyone is interested in clean government. Everyone wants a democracy. Everyone wants the conflicts of interest eliminated. I think you saw that in the presidential race where Bernie Sanders and Donald Trump on both philosophically opposite, but they both talked about a broken system. And the federal system is broken. The state system is broken. And most people want honest government. They want a democracy. And what we're planning will appeal across the board, which is nonpartisan elections, real campaign finance reform, lobbying reform, all the things that will increase participation, whatever party you belong to. What we know is that on a bipartisan level, the political system is corrupt because the machines on both sides of the aisle, and generally the Republican and Democratic machines, political machines, are basically trying to keep participation down. They put all kinds of obstacles to people voting, so that they're in the business of politics.
Well, let me ask you, if in fact you were the mayor right now in the midst of this controversy about the upcoming Puerto Rican Day parade on June 11th up Fifth Avenue, the mayor has decided to march in a parade that is honoring Oscar Lopez Rivera, who is the head of the FALN. Melissa Mark Viverito, the Speaker of the Council, is defending that move. What would you do as mayor?
I would not march. I announced a couple of weeks ago, actually, that I would not march in that parade. I think it's disrespectful to the people that lost family members, people that were injured. Their families are still in the city. It's kind of tone deaf to march in a parade where people were killed, Francis Tavern and other places, police officers were injured, and obviously this man was involved because he spent 35 years in jail. Whether you agree or disagree that his sentence should have been commuted, the bottom line is it's a slap in the face to a lot of people in this city to honor somebody like that in a parade. So no. I will not march this year in the Puerto Rican Day Parade.
All right. Sal, one final question. The continued battles between this mayor, de Blasio, and the sitting governor, Cuomo, have affected what is now taking place in the subway system. We are mirroring what's happening downstairs from us with the Long Island Railroad, New Jersey Transit, Amtrak every day. There are signal problems. There are delays. There are trains that are not running in their proper order. How would you amend the situation with Cuomo so that we can get the subway system back on track?
Well, I had a horrible commute today on the R line. I spent an hour and 45 minutes because of signal trouble. So I'm very familiar with the terrible subway system that we have. And de Blasio has been missing in action on this. What I would do is I would use all my leverage in the bully pulpit to get Cuomo and the legislature to properly fund mass transit, because we can't afford not to have a great transit system. The city's future depends on it. There are a couple of bills in the legislature which would direct funding from the personal income tax right into mass transit on a regular basis to fund the infrastructure. We have pre-World War II signals that are failing on a regular basis, and I think that the governor has to step up, but the mayor has a big role. I was around in the 1980s when Koch used the bully pulpit to get Cuomo the Elder to fix the system where the trains were literally falling off the tracks. So it's the most important system in the city. The mayor has ignored it. He has four appointees on the MTA board, and they've not been aggressive about funding the system. I would up the city's share, and I would go to Albany and make mass transit one of my priorities.
Well, that's,
we cannot afford not to have a great system.
Sal Albany,
it's a disaster now.
That's the music to Cuomo's ears, that you would up the share that New York City contributes to the subway system might make for some peace and harmony. Anyway, that's former city councilman, former mayoral candidate Sal Albanese. He's running in the Democratic primary to unseat Bill de Blasio. But last night, he earned our Reform Party line to run also in the general election to oust Bill de Blasio. Now, Sal Albanese is known as a Democrat, liberal, progressive. Shocked a lot of people that we would go in that direction since we had chosen for our public advocate choice, J.C. Polanco, Republican from the Bronx, formerly with the Board of Elections as he tried to reform that, and Michael Faulkner, Republican, who was running for mayor, and then had to back out, but chose to run on the controller line, and he earned our Reform Party candidate designation. You can find out so much more. Just go online to the NewYorkReformParty.com.
Curtis Lewa.
Really trying to help our cause.
The Drive at 5.
We're very honored to have him here today.
77 WABC.
I know I'd go from rags to riches.
Here's story of a kid taking you home on the drive home at 5, Tony Bennett. And his song, obviously, is so synonymous with the movie Goodfellas, which was about the Lucchese crime family of Paulie Vario, a guy who I grew up with in Canarsie in East New York. In fact, I grew up with two major Italian organized crime families. On one side of the block, there were the Gambinos on Avenue L. The other side of the block, there were the Lucchese's. Where one had a gin mill on one side of the block, the other had the gin mill on the other side of the block. Social club on 92nd and L for the Lucchese's. Across the street, there were the Gambinos. So I am jumping for joy at the fact that the U.S. Attorney's Office of the Southern District has busted the head of the Lucchese crime family, Madonna.
You.
Hey, wait a second. I'm not talking about you, you puton.
You.
Wait a second. Stop.
You.
Stop stealing kids from Africa and bringing them back to America.
You.
I'm talking about Matthew Madonna, the capo di tutti of the Lucchese crime family. And in addition, they busted the underboss, Stephen Cree, a senior, a real piece of work. And naturally, the evil seed was replanted in the form of Stephen Cree, Jr., who was a capo. But there were other capos arrested as they pulled out the daisy chain, perp walk chains. There was the capos Oh, this is great. John, Big John, Castorucci, Tindero, Tino Corso, and the soldiers, James, Jimmy the Jew, Mafiuccio, Joseph, Joey Glasses, Datello, Paul, Paulie, Roast Beef, Cassano, and the consigliere himself, Joseph DiNapoli. These are sfachims. These are schifosas of the worst type. Because these guys have been indicted on a number of murder charges and attempting to suppress information from witnesses who were ready to drop dime on members of the Lucchese crime family. So the idea was, oh, snitches get stitches and end up in ditches. You have violated the code of Omerta. The Lucchese's were telling these people, we will hunt you down. We will find you. If you've left your abode in Westchester or the Bronx and you've traveled down to Florida, we will somehow find you and kill you. And it's great that the U.S. Attorney's Office has been able to effectively, at least for now, put them out of business. But it all starts with Madonna.
You.
No. Hey, putain, don't you understand?
You.
Everything isn't about you, Madonna.
You.
And if you are related to Matthew Madonna, you should go straight to hell like he should without an asbestos suit. But more importantly, if you followed the story of Goodfellas, in which you saw that they torched the bamboo lounge, you were under the impression that it occurred maybe in South Ozone Park and Howard Beach. No. The Bamboo Lounge was just a few blocks where I live from in Canarsie. It was right on the corner of Avenue N and Rockaway Parkway. And I'll never forget that across the street, they held the very first meeting of the Italian-American Civil Rights League that was led by Joseph Colombo at that time, of the Colombo crime family. And they had a unity rally involving the Colombo crime family there, along with the Lucchese crime family. And the guy sitting at the desk for that very first meeting taking names and info was Paul Ivario himself. This was an evil cabal of the worst type. These were neighborhoods that were strangled by organized crime. And many people to this day, in fact, some who attended the wake in the funeral of my mother, Francesca, would say, hey, come on, Curtis, knock it off. Come on, these are some of my extended family members. Don't you realize that in the old neighborhoods, the wise guys, the broken noses used to keep peace and tranquility and keep the dope fiends out and keep the moulinons out, which was code language for black people? And I look at them and I say, who do you think was bringing the junk in? Who do you think was bringing the heroin in that people would pump into their veins and arteries on a regular basis by spiking themselves? It was members of the Gambinos, the Genovese, the Lucchese's, the Colombos, the Bananos, and across the river in New Jersey, the Di Cavalcante crime family. So don't give me these romanticized notions. Hey, Madonna and Crea Sr. and Crea Jr., and the capos and the consiglieres of the Lucchese crime family, you should all burn in hell for the damage that you've done to society and how you have maligned the name of hardworking Italian-American peoples out there. A double disgrazia to you.